surprise many, especially on the MAGA right, this possibility of U.S. security guarantees, which could lead up to U.S. troops on the ground in Ukraine.
Well, my main argument in response to what Mr. Pelosi said is that he greatly overestimates what President Trump can do here. The fact is, the Russians say unequivocally that they will not accept a ceasefire. What is Trump supposed to do? He can't force the Russians to accept the ceasefire. What Trump has done is he's recognized reality, which is you're not going to get a ceasefire. And therefore, he's moved on to talking about a peace agreement. He has no choice. Trump is powerless in this regard. Secondly, with regard to working out some sort of peace deal, Trump can't do it. And the reason Trump can't do it is because the Ukrainians and the Europeans on one side and the Russians on the other side are miles apart. There's no basis for compromise here. And Trump can't create a basis for compromise. And furthermore, he can't coerce the Russians into agreeing to Ukraine's terms. And he can't coerce the Ukrainians and the Europeans on the other side to agree to Russia's terms. So this one is going to be settled on the battlefield. And what Trump wants to do is he wants to back away and he wants to turn responsibility for this war mainly over to the Europeans and the Ukrainians. Let them see what happens on the battlefield, and then they can work out an arrangement with Putin. This is the direction that we're headed in. Now, the second question you ask, Amy, is what do I think about security guarantees? What the Ukrainians want and what the Europeans want is for the United States to give Ukraine a viable security guarantee, something akin to Article 5 of the NATO treaty. This is categorically unacceptable to the Russians. This war is all about Ukraine's membership in NATO and Ukraine having a security guarantee from NATO. That's unacceptable to the Russians. And you have to understand that if Ukraine is not in NATO, yet Ukraine has a security guarantee, a real security guarantee from the United States, that's effectively the same thing as being inside of NATO. And the Russians are not going to tolerate that. So what you'll get if you get a security guarantee is some sort of vague language that has no real punch to it. And at the same time, the Russians will make it clear that they will have a veto over any U.S. or European commitment to coming to the aid of Ukraine at a crisis. So you're not going to get a security guarantee. You're not going to get European troops stationed on Ukrainian soil. And the Russians are going to continue to demand that Ukrainian disarm to the point where it has no offensive capability against Russia. But of course, the Europeans are arguing and Ukraine is arguing that if anything, what should happen here is that the Europeans and the Americans should be allowed to rearm Ukraine and make it stronger. This is antithetical to the Russians. Again, this is why you have no agreement on substance. And even if Trump succeeds in getting Putin and Zelensky to sit down and talk, I ask, where is that going to lead, given that they don't agree on anything?
On the issue of security guarantees, you know, Article 5-like guarantees, because Ukraine isn't a part of NATO, Denis Pilash, what are your thoughts on what this would mean, whether it's European security guarantees or U.S.?
Well, first of all, I would like to respond to this general narrative about this everything about NATO. Ukraine wasn't going to be a member of NATO because of the position of the major European member states. And this was well known. And actually, the main salesman for NATO, both in Ukraine and in the Nordic countries, in Sweden and Finland, was Putin himself. Because prior to the annexation of Crimea and to stirring up the war in Donbass by Russia, the support for NATO membership in Ukraine was rather low. And it was a very vague prospect that wasn't really pursued. And only after all this Russian aggression happened, it was skyrocketing. And the same goes for Finland, for instance. And given the fact that Finland joined NATO and the Russia-NATO border has doubled, we see no reaction on the side of Russia. Though, if we give into this assumption that it's all about NATO, then they would panic that NATO is coming to St. Petersburg and so on. But it doesn't happen, because actually the reason for the war is much more complex, and it's rooted in the agency of Russian imperialism itself. And what's really appalling in many people on the left falling for these narratives that are pursued by Mr. Mearsheimer is that we really abandon class analysis. We forget about what everything is about, that states aren't some sort of monolithic interests. They are comprised of different classes and their contradictions, and even the ruling classes have their internal contradictions. And there is lots of reasons, economic, ideological, political, that lay behind these complex issues. And just by, you know, rejecting domestic factors as shaping international policy as well, we go nowhere. So now, if we speak about what's happening now, so obviously Ukraine needs some sort of guarantees, and without it, it seems completely futile, because the so-called peace agreement will mean not just abandoning millions of people for the sake of the occupier, with all the brutality of occupation. And I can just mention, I used to work briefly with the journalist Victoria Roshina. So she was kidnapped at the occupied territories. She was detained illegally by the Russians. She was ultimately tortured and killed. And then her body was returned with organs missing to conceal the tortures. And this is a fate that is really not that uncommon for the people in this gray zone of the occupation. But this also means that Ukraine will be completely harmed, without any protection from further Russian attacks. So at any point, Russia will have all the capacity and no restraints to repeat what they did back in 2022. So what sort of peace are we even arguing about? This is not a peace, this is a continuation of the war. This is the war and occupation in other terms. So ultimately, it's quite natural that Ukraine, the people of Ukraine, they want some guarantees that the situation with Budapest memorandum that was just torn apart by one of its states that was guaranting it, that it's not repeated. And this means that you need to have countries that will provide some sort of guarantees that they will act against further attempts of aggression. This doesn't mean purely Western countries. You can try to reach out to the countries of the global South, because the precedent that is set by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, that one country tries to redraw unilaterally international borders by the war of aggression, it may unleash an even worse mayhem throughout the world if it's really enshrined in a sort of, agreement where we reward the aggressor.
Dennis
so
Pilon.
This will have very dire consequences for countries throughout other regions as well. So we can also try to get a broader picture, a broader framework, and a broader number of countries that can act in order to prevent this. But obviously, what's now on the table and what's pursued by Washington isn't really interested in any sort of guaranteeing Ukrainian integrity, security, anything. So it's all about dividing the world into spheres of influence and then this world carved up by this great states. Everyone can do whatever they want in their backyard. So this is the same for Putin as well.
Let me ask Professor Mearsheimer about something you've written, Denis Pilash. Professor Mearsheimer, Pilash warns of a new axis emerging, bringing together Trump, Putin, Netanyahu, the far right in Europe, and various authoritarian regimes from around the world, calling for the left to defend a renewed internationalism that opposes all oppressors. Your response?
Well, I think that Trump is simply trying to improve relations with Russia in this case, and he's simply trying to shut down the Ukraine war. I think that is in Americans' national interest, America's national interest. I think it is in Ukraine's national interest. I think if we could end this war, that would be a good thing. I do not think that Trump is interested in joining into some sort of worldwide alliance with right-wing governments, including the Russian government, to suppress liberal democracies around the world. I don't think that that's happening here.
It's interesting because aren't you very critical of Trump when it comes to what's happening in Gaza and his support for Netanyahu? It's interesting to see that table yesterday at the White House where you have one European leader after another demanding a ceasefire. What Meres is calling for an arms embargo against Israel. You've got Starmer and Macron calling for recognition of the Palestinian state. It would be interesting for them to take on Israel's occupation of Gaza and what's going on there at the same time they were talking about Ukraine.
You're not going to get any argument from me on that. The whole question of U.S. policy toward Israel is fundamentally different than the question of U.S. policy towards Russia. I think that U.S. policy toward Israel, especially with regard to Gaza, is abhorrent. You know that. But I think Russia is a different matter. I think that Trump is on the right side with regard to Ukraine. He's not interested in selling the Ukrainians down the river. He doesn't have animosity towards Ukraine. What Trump is interested in doing is trying to get the Ukrainians to recognize reality and to understand that from Ukraine's point of view, the best outcome would be to settle this war now. Yes, is it going to be settled on terms that are favorable to the Russians? Of course, because the Russians are in the driver's seat on the battlefield, and there's nothing that Ukraine and the United States can do to reverse that situation. But he's not, Trump, trying to sell the Ukrainians down the river. He's trying to settle this war, and he can't do it because the Ukrainians and the Europeans on one side and the Russians on the other side can't reach any sort of agreement on the terms of a settlement. But that's basically what's going on here.
Denis Pilash, your response, and do you agree that this is going to be settled on the battlefield? Is this what you want to see?
No, this is only a part of the, again, broader picture, because still there are things that can be done to curb Russia's potential to wage this imperialist aggressive war. And still there are many loopholes in the economic sanctions against Russia that are taken up only recently. For instance, the case of the shadow fleet of Russian oil tankers that are shipping oil under other guise of other countries and actually profiteering the Russian war machine. And still, there is a lot of things that could be done actually to reframe, redraw the broader security architecture and not to, you know, reward the aggressive states. So this is not just about what's happening on the battlefield, but it's part of the, obviously, the part of the broader picture. And, Russia is going with all this indiscriminate killing of Ukrainians, regardless they are civilians or servicemen who used to be yesterday civilians. I stand on the Maidan Nezalezhnosti Square, where just yesterday we had the funeral of our comrade anarchist activist and artist David Chichkan, who also died on the front line because he deemed Russia to be a major fascist threat. And he, as many Ukrainians, saw no other option as to take up arms and to resist. But ultimately, this is again about not trying to make the picture more rosier for the aggressor, and trying to, for whatever it does, then we hear these responses that there is some rationale behind this. And Mr. Mearsheimer and his co-author, they went so far to try to rationalize even the decision of Hitler to start the worst bloodbath in world history by attacking the Soviet Union in the Second World War. But ultimately, this is nothing rational and nothing pragmatic in resorting to war as your main way of doing international policy. And this means that we need to really be consistent in the positions, both on Ukraine, on Palestine, and broader, for all those people who are subject to oppression, to aggression, to subjugation, to more powerful imperialist or sub-imperialist forces. So this needs, at least for the people on the left who believe in progressive values, that we are against any such policies, and that we unite in our solidarity. And first of all, this means that we should at least try to listen to each other, to understand the situation on the ground, to listen to the people on the ground. And it's sometimes also appalling when we see major outlets who try to discuss Ukraine or Central Eastern Europe without even inviting people from the region, just some Westerners. And I hope that Democracy Now, that has done so much great things to expose the truth, and you personally, Amy, starting from the genocide in East Timor, to give voice to the oppressed, to the attacked, that you will go on to invite more voices from our region and more voices from oppressed people throughout the world.
Well, thanks. We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much, Denis Pilash, for joining us from Ukraine's capital, from Kyiv. Denis Pilash is a Ukrainian political scientist and historian, a member of the Ukrainian Democratic Socialist Organization, and editor at Commons, the Journal of Social Criticism. And thanks so much to John Mearsheimer, political science professor at the University of Chicago, speaking to us from Chicago. Coming up, we go to California, where an immigrant rights activist and nurse was violently detained while monitoring ICE agents earlier this month. Stay with us. Congelado, paralizado, sin moverse, hipnotizado, con los ojos vendados, los oídos tapados, sin saber hacia dónde vamos. Nadie detiene, nadie soporta. Retrocedemos y nada importa. Falsificados, adormecidos, manipulados, embrutecidos. Queremos comer sin tener que masticar. Queremos ver sin tener que mirar. Buscamos vivir y nos dejamos matar. Ile, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We go now to Los Angeles, California, where grassroots organizers are challenging some of the most intense federal shows of force and immigration enforcement crackdowns of Trump's second term. Earlier this month, the community activist, ICU nurse Amanda Trebach, was violently arrested while documenting the operations of ICE agents. She's a member of the group Unión del Barrio. At the time of her arrest, Amanda was participating in a peace patrol outside Terminal Island, a Coast Guard base used by ICE and Customs and Border Protection as a hub for operations in California. Dozens of volunteers have routinely stationed themselves outside Terminal Island to monitor the movement of the federal vehicles streaming in and out of the staging area. Terminal Island was once a thriving Japanese-American fishing village that was demolished during World War II with its residents forcibly sent to internment camps. Footage of Amanda Traybach's arrest shows two plainclothes masked agents pinning her against the pavement as they kneel on her back and head to handcuff her. One of the agents, yes, seen putting his knee on Traybach's head for a brief moment as a person recording yells, "Get off her head."
Roman, you. Get off her head!
Get off me!
Get off your knee!
Get off her head!
Get it off!
Get back.
Get off her head!
Get back.
This is public property, sir. This is public property.
Streaming live, this is ICE beating her up. They got her knee on her head. I am where I need to be, 10 feet, so.
You guys get her in the van?
Sir?
You okay?
Yeah.
Amanda Traybach is a U.S. citizen. She was forced into an unmarked black van by at least half a dozen unidentified agents. Her release from federal custody came amidst pressure from activists, community protests, and the National Nurses United Union. Amanda Traybach is joining us now. Welcome to Democracy Now! Amanda, I'm glad you're out. We spoke to your colleague, Ron Goetschez, to describe what happened to you before you were speaking. Can you explain exactly why you were there, what you were intending to do as a peace patrol, warning people about the ICE agents, and what they did to you?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on this morning, Amy. I really appreciate the opportunity. So myself and other many other people and groups have been at Terminal Island, which, as you had mentioned, is near the port of L.A. in San Pedro, near Long Beach, California. We've been there legally monitoring the activity of ICE on and comings and goings off the island, and alerting the community. Specifically, the Harbor Area Peace Patrols has been wonderful. And alerting the community not only of the vehicles to look out for so they can feel safer, but also what areas are safe in around the neighborhood where ICE is not. So people can go to the park, they can go to the grocery store and feel as though they're not going to be taken and kidnapped. So what we've also been doing is we've seen these vehicles at Terminal Island, almost every single one of them out in the L.A. area. It's small and large raids across the area. We can directly connect them back to Terminal Island and living in our communities, staying in our communities in Long Beach. So we're also connecting license plates. These vehicles are either, they have license plates that are not connected to these vehicles. We have indications and photo evidence that the license plates are being changed as well, and that some don't even have license plates. So, you know, that is something that we're doing, but also just making sure the community is aware of what is happening, what to look out for, so they can feel a little bit safer as well.
So explain what happened to you. And this wasn't the first attempt of ICE to arrest you.
No. So we are on public property. When we're there, it's actually by the Japanese Memorial on the civilian side of Terminal Island. At one point, I was going on to the island to park to peacefully monitor and document. I was pulling in to park, and I was blocked in by ICE agents. And actually, I backed up to try to park, and they jumped out of their vehicle. They were masked, and they had their large guns. They pulled them on me. They illegally tried to open my door. Thank goodness it was locked. I did not allow them in. I said no. I backed up, and they then tried to block me in again. And finally, I pulled into the parking spot, and they sped off.
So tell us then about, and we're watching it right now, the video of you being taken on, what was it, August 8th?
Yes. So we were out on Terminal Island just like any other day, monitoring to be able to alert the community of vehicles to look out for. And we had our sign saying this Terminal Island is not safe, San Pedro is not safe with ICE agents here. And we for some reason, they came out in a large convoy that morning, and they... I guess their tactics have been changing. They've been frustrated. The community, is aware. LA is aware what they were doing is illegal. They are kidnapping us. And I say kidnappers because they're not federal agents. Many of them, some of them are not federal agents. They're vigilantes. We don't know who they are. They're masked. They're not telling us who they are. So they came out in a convoy. They jumped out of the vehicle. As you could see, they pinned me to the ground they handcuffed me. They took me into an unmarked vehicle. They did not read me my rights. They didn't tell me where I was going. They shut the vehicle. They drove me to the other side of the non-civilian side of Terminal Island. And basically, they kidnapped me. I didn't know what was going on. I was there for 4 hours.
What about all of their knee on your head?
Yeah. Yeah, their knee was on my head. My face was on the concrete. My head was hurting. The night that I was in, they took me to the detention center. It was hurting very bad. My shoulder, actually, and my hip, because they pinned me down so hard to the ground. And then, they were very rough with me, violent with me. When they got me into the, after they closed the door of the truck and took me to the other side of Terminal Island, and I had to wait there for hours and hours without knowing what was happening. Finally, a woman who said she was from Homeland Security, she came. And at that point in time, they had put me in another unmarked vehicle with two masked people, I guess, that were drivers of some sort. And this entire time, the Port Police, the Port Authority was aware. They saw what was going on. No one tried to assist me. No one tried to help. They see the guns being drawn on me. So...
Can you talk about where you were held in these last minute, where you were held, the federal facility, the conditions you witnessed there?
Sure, sure. So the water was not good. I was not giving any toiletries to speak of. I was told I would have to purchase a cup, and thank goodness I was, the community came around, the Union del Barrio Community Self-Defense Coalition, All Power Free Clinic. We're not stepping down. That's why I was freed as a political prisoner, because of the community coming together. And we know these tactics are escalating. ICE kidnappers are escalating. They're not following the temporary restraining order that has been carried out by the judge. They're coming after us. They're escalating their tactics.
And the impact
we're here.
Overall,
we're growing.
The impact overall, Amanda, on the community, and especially the targeted community, undocumented immigrants. But it goes much broader than that, because anyone who they suspect of being undocumented, many being arrested, being deported, and why you as a nurse decided this is your role, this is your job right now.
Well, as a nurse in South Central LA, I see that my patients tell me that they are not coming to the hospital. They're scared. So there's implications that are broad and far-reaching. People are sicker. They're coming in and they're dying because they did not want to come to the hospital. They're coming to the ICE kidnappers are coming to areas that are supposed to be safe for us. We want to take care of our patients. And now people are sicker. They're not coming in. Our census has been down. Even the hospital has indicated that this is the case. So that's as a nurse, it's a solidarity, right? They're coming after people, but we're the way that we're going to win, and we're organizing community patrols and fighting back is through solidarity for all people. And it's my duty, and I'm very honored to be here with Union del Barrio and other organizations to organize. And like I said, we're growing. We encourage people to join the Community Self-Defense Coalition and other organizations.
Amanda, we're going to have to leave it there. Amanda Trebach is an ICU nurse, a member of Union del Barrio. She was detained by ICE for a day, violently detained. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
The Slate Family Foundation Legacy Program was created by the Unison Fund to support Canadian music industry veterans. For more information on this lifeline of hope, visit unisonfund.ca.
No matter your disability, you likely face barriers in your everyday life. At Neil Squire, we help break those barriers down by helping you access employment, technology, and the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. As a nonprofit organization, we empower people with disabilities all across Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn.